Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Sports Joe presents the GAA Hour.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the GAR. My name is Lee Costello and I am delighted to be joined by Tyrone legend Sean Cavanagh. Sean has teamed up with AIB, proud partner of the Gold Mile, to encourage communities in Ireland to step up together and take part of the Gold Mile this Christmas. AIB are also offering people the chance to win €1,000 by registering for their Gold Mile by visiting www.goldmile.org. So without further ado, here is three-time All-Ireland winner, five-time All-Star winner and 2008 Player of the Year, Sean Cavanagh. Hey, Sean, how are things?
Hi, all good, man. Yourself?
I'm good. I think I talk about it every podcast episode. I'm a big Tyrone fan, so I'm really excited about this.
What part of Tyrone are you from?
I'm from a little village called Coke. It's just outside Cookstown.
I know it well, yeah. Man, George Best played for Coke United, didn't he?
Well, I'll tell people that he did, but I don't think so.
You guys were ramming things. Like my dad, remember saying to me, "Oh, I went to see, like, I think Russ Cook or George Best went and played one time."
I think it was Tobermore, actually. I know what you're talking about. He played this ram that game.
Tobermore culture, same thing.
Yeah, same thing. I'm from there too. But yeah, no, obviously you've made a big decision recently. You know, you've hung up the boots, you've retired. But it's not the first time, you know, that you've retired. You recently came out of retirement. So I just wanted you to talk us through that situation, why you did that, and in what capacity you did so.
Okay, look, I think you only get me the more the sort of club means to you and means more to you. And yeah, like I kind of had tried to walk away a couple of years ago and I actually ended up coming back. I kind of walked away 2 years ago, come back the following year. And to try and dig them out because we were in like a relegation playoff. They'll play it then. And then this year, the club had a sort of number of lads who were sort of injured at the start of the year in the way of playing the States and stuff. And I'd been playing basketball in the off season, which you do. And I was probably in decent enough sort of shape. And sort of you get pulled back into it. A skate always starts with actually, you come down here and we're short a couple of numbers in the training game or something. So you're standing in there, see how you get on. And then the typical sort of man thing, you stand in and you get on all right. And you're like, sure, I'll give it a go here for a week or so. And you don't tell the wife what you didn't. And then you sort of get sucked back in and that the body was holding up rightly. And then I suppose the things weren't going so well performance-wise, and the opportunity then come to kind of go to the management piece as well, and kind of left in a bit of a hybrid role then from sort of August onwards was a player-manager role. And because it was a club that I loved, because we were doing well, I loved the buzz of it. Like I still am a huge football man, deep-rooted to core, and whenever I saw my own club doing well, whenever I was part of that, whether it was on the sideline or on the pitch itself, it just gave me immense pride. And but I do have to grow up at some point. I am coming 41 and
I do have four young kids. I do have a fairly big business here. And yeah, lots of things kind of happen in my life. So it almost is like I don't have time anymore is the best way of saying it for what you need to sacrifice to be a top level sort of club player or club manager. Probably I don't have the time to do that, but I'll never be able to say no to my own club either because I just love it so much. So I think the club knows that as well, that whenever they need somebody, they'll always come knocking and saying, oh God, Sean might be able to give us a dig out, and they'll know that I'll struggle to say no. So that's the way it kind of played out this year. But yeah, I think I'm gonna try and stick to it as much as possible. But then I see John Doyle stand at 45 and midfield for his 12 and sort of looking going, you never know. As on the bag's at the back door. It'll be in the garage this weekend for whenever I'm pulling out the Christmas stuff.
Talk to me about that hybrid role, because player manager, it's an unusual enough situation in Gaelic football, even at club level. Did you find it tricky trying to, you know, when do you bring yourself on? You know, decisions like that must be hard to make.
I definitely opened myself up for plenty of abuse as well. Whenever I was coming on, I was let known that, God, you just took off a good player and you brought yourself on there, you idiot. But it probably worked okay because I kind of had that discipline then. Obviously, I always sort of started myself on the sideline and I was able to kind of watch the game in the first half and sort of analyze just where maybe we could get at the opposition and how we could sort of change things around. And because I suppose I'd played in a lot of different positions as well in my career, I was able to then decide where I was best suited to come in, just given the kind of opposition and the circumstances of the game. And sometimes I come in at full forward and was kind of that front line player. And other times I come in, ran around midfield, or even sometimes as like a defensive minded midfielder. It just depend on the same and kind of where I felt that there was opportunity to improve the team. And yeah, it worked out more than not, I would say. And I got to enjoy getting the lungs open and playing a bit of football as well. But like, yeah, somewhat challenging as well. Like, there's no getting away from that. The fact that there were a number of games that we had to make kind of decisions towards the end of the game. And if I'm standing 70 meters away from the sideline and trying to get a message across, like I had to kind of even a couple of games say to like Water Boys and all the team here, go down and tell that like a good friend of mine was kind of in along with me then as well. So I was going around going, here, get the match down to Gary to get such off and bring such on and time to switch there with him. And it's not a bad thing either, because like there's advantages to being on the pitch as well and understanding. I think when you're on the pitch, you can understand the flow of the game much better. Particularly when you're a bit slower, like I am these days, you're not as fast moving, so you're able to observe things a bit better. I definitely think it can be done, and I think we made a good stab at being very successful with it. Probably could and should have maybe won on the county final day, and but other than that, it definitely worked for us, and worked for me too.
Yeah, it definitely did. Let's take it right back then, because obviously I already mentioned, you know, as a Tyrone fan growing up watching, I was watching a golden generation of Tyrone, but I was probably too young to realize that's what it was. I was just sort of, this is how it's always going to be and always will be. But you were actually one of the youngest on that team, especially in 2003. Were you even really aware of it at that time? Like, did you know that you'd something really special here, but it probably won't last forever?
No, I'd no idea, to be honest. I kind of grew up with that little bit of youthful arrogance almost that, you know, I came into the team in 2002 with Big Art McCrory and Eugene McCann, great men they were. And we waltzed through the National League that year. We beat Cavan in the final down in Clonus by about 20 points or something. But like for me, it was just like, you know, I'd grown up watching Peter Canavan, obviously, and he was kind of my hero. So being able to play with your hero was just phenomenal. And just in those early years of like 02, 03, 04 and 05, for me, it was sort of looking across the change room and seeing Peter Ganovan sitting the other end and sort of getting giddy to myself more so than anything. But, you know, and Mickey had a great role to play as well at that point in time, because I think It's probably an interesting thing because I think he sees something somewhat similar in Derry right now. But I think Mickey saw, like, in 2002, we were a great team. And we were primed and ready to win an All-Ireland even that year. We had a bit of bad luck at Sligo in the last 16, where a number of injuries, probably including himself. But I think Mickey come in to a squad that was getting better at a serious rate and had a real sense of sort of belief, even though most of us were very young at this stage. And Mickey gave us the sort of magic dust of making us feel somewhat invincible, and was great at sort of doing the drill against the world. And we just bonded incredibly strongly. But did I realize that we would, that a drone team would not be like that? No, I didn't, like, because it's all I knew as an 18-year-old, making the debut in Dungannon against Dublin in 2002. I was obviously buzzing, but I just felt that that's what drone teams are. We're just great footballers, and maybe it's always going to be, I guess. And I have to say, the one thing about Mickey was every year I took to the field as a drone player, I always felt we were going to win the All-Ireland. Now, we didn't, more than we did, but at the same time, he had a great way of making you feel special. But that group we had, probably from 2002 or 2003 right through to sort of 2009-10, it's an incredible group. I think it's a bit like the sort of Dublin of the sort of 2011 through to whatever, probably 2017 or 18 or 19. I think we had a group of exceptional people, and we were through a fair bit of turmoil as well, and heartache with Cormac and Paul before that, and then Michaela. But yeah, it was incredible times.
And even before that, and this is just such a silly question, but I've read your book a couple of times, and the one that I always laugh at is your university years, because you're obviously primarily a midfielder and 0-full forward at times, but primarily a midfielder. And one of your biggest strengths was your athleticism. But actually, back in the day beforehand, diet was maybe a struggle of yours, and uni life got the best of you. And Damian Barton said a great line to you. He was the Jordanstown manager at the time, I think. Whatever you're eating, half it. And whatever you're training, double it. What was going on back then?
Yeah, this is great. Like, 2002... After 2002, I was my first year in university. Like, for his pressure at Jordanstown, the crack was good. Like, so yeah, it was more about what you were getting for a carry out rather than what time the gym was happening at. Like, so that was back in the good old things, whenever you actually got to really let your hair down in the off season. So we won in 2001, we won All Ireland Minor with Tyrone, and then I was straight in then to sort of first year university. It was fresher in 2002, kind of played the year, but I picked up a few injuries and stuff. I rolled my ankle and missed the Sligo game and stuff towards the end of the year, but I was enjoying myself. There was at least three nights a week I was out in Belfast then, and sort of tidied myself up somewhat for the sort of 2002 summer county season, but then got injured and then slipped into sort of Belfast again, and the crack was good. But Damian Barton took over the Sigerson in Jordanstown. I remember we were running around one night, must be then around sort of maybe October 2002, November 2002, we were running around the Mary Peters track, and I'm not even joking you, we were doing maybe like 400 meter runs or something. But I remember one night I was struggling. I got two or three nights out in a row in Belfast, and the crack was good. And my wife coined the term Chunky Sean back then. I definitely was carrying a bit of beat. And I remember trying to run in one of these sort of maybe like 400 meter runs in. I was trying to keep up with the rest of the lads and struggling to do that. And I remember seeing this like freaking 60-year-old woman dash past me and run past me. And it was Damian Bart who brought to me after that, and he genuinely pulled me aside, and he said that. He goes, whatever you're eating, have it. Whatever you're training, double it. And then he goes to me, and this, I think it must be around November, he goes, because we're gonna start doing a bit of extra training, big man. And in fairness to him, he was incredible, because me and there was two or three other lads, a lad from Galway, a lad, Eddie McCrory, and guy from my own club as well, was Georgetown by Mark Jordan at that point in time.
And he would have rang me and he said, Sean, we're going running around where Surpass Academy Dungannon is. We went to the pitches down there. It was like a big sort of cross-country track and a couple of pitches in the middle. And like he would have rang me and said, Sean, me, you, and a couple of other lads are going, like on a, say, could be a random Sunday morning or something. And he genuinely come and he met me and a couple of other lads and he ran the absolute bollocks of us. But I remember him saying to me after one of the sort of runs that we did, like an individual thing with him, I remember him saying to me, Sean, like he was friendly, he would have taught with Ark McCrory and Simpats Dungannon, and Simpats would have been the intermediate Dungannon at that point, so Simpats College. And I remember him saying to me privately, he said, look, I've been chatting to Art and I know Art thinks a huge amount of you, and I know Art has sort of said to me, if you got yourself athletically right, you would be a serious footballer for Tyrone. And he said that like as a dairyman sort of saying that, like, and he said that in a very sort of genuine way that he had my best interest at heart. And yeah, it's one of those moments, Lee, to be honest, I kind of look back and go, you know what, Art McCrory and Damien Barton, even though I only really played for them for the guts of a year, that they had a big impact in kind of turning me into the footballer that it was. Because in 2003, I kind of then sprung onto the scene. I kind of, as the year went on, then I kind of went from a sort of heaviest corner forward to I got the chance in midfield, and athletically, then I was able to get up and down the pitch, and it was quite hard to handle then from there on. So I definitely look back at those sorts of critical moments that my career kind of went in different directions, and Damien and Art was a big driving force around getting me in the right shape that I needed to be.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Damien's son Shane Barton managed my minor team, and he's still the best manager I ever had. So I can only imagine what he was like.
Like, you know what the best thing that I would say about Damien and Art, like Damien and Art were incredibly direct to your face. I remember actually we played in 2002 down in the qualifier in Wexford, and I'm one of these bizarre sort of lads. I don't eat salad, so I don't eat salad. So they would roll out like, you know, soup and sandwiches before a match or something, and they'd roll out like we're sitting over hotel in Wexford, and they rolled out with like 25 trays of salad sandwiches, and I was like, ah, freaking hell, I'm starving here.
So I remember clearing off to like a wee local shop in Wexford on my own, and I landed back with like a Mars bar and a bag of potato with cheese and onion and like a Lucozade. And Art like put his arm over my shoulder and he's like, big man, I'm happy to get rid of this stuff out of your dad right away. But he was like joking with the jag. It was like,
yeah, man,
you better get rid of that. But at the same time, you knew he had your best interest at heart. And Damien was the same. Like, Damien, I'm no ball telling you, you're fat, you're useless, unless you actually get loose 2 stone for me. But he was telling you to better yourself. So yeah, both of them men were brilliant, but brutal at the same time.
Yeah, I bet. Well, it all worked out in the end. Obviously, you became a great footballer, part of that great team. And in 2008 in particular, you won Player of the Year. I was wondering, in your opinion, do you think that was the best version of Sean Kavanagh? Because there's an argument that a little bit, maybe later in the career, you maybe just didn't have, you weren't as part as great a team. So the All-Irelands weren't there and maybe go on a little bit unnoticed, but you would only know yourself how you felt.
Yeah, no, I probably didn't. If I'm honest with you, like, I always, kind of weird that, like, if you ask me right now, go and pick a team where you'd want to play, I probably, even as a 18-year-old, as a minor, like I wore number 11. I always felt I was the best place of me was number 11, because I always had this. I was reasonably good at sort of finishing and scoring, which I always wanted to be close-ish to goal. But equally, I'm just this sort of, I've like a bound. I always had like a boundless energy and a real zest for looking the ball. So it used to frustrate me a lot when I was inside as a 14, because I wanted to get out and be able to compete for kickouts and sort of be running on the off the shoulder and the overlap and stuff. So it used to restrict me that. So, but the problem was we had a pretty good number 11 for those golden years as well. So I never really had the chance whenever Brian was knocking around there. But And 2008, I'd say for a lot of the year, I actually was very frustrated. I remember actually saying to Mickey in a couple of stages, going, look, I get delighted here. I don't think I'm bringing out the best version of myself here as a 14. But I can, at first, to Mickey, he sort of said to me, he goes, look, I think that's where we need you right now, because he probably had looked at, and that's what most good managers do, they look at the resources that they had. And at that point in time, we had obviously Brian and Marty Penrose was kind of playing at around 11. We had Cully Holmes and Ryan Mellon, Kevin Hughes, boys like that were pretty strong in around midfield. And we probably were somewhat late up top. You know, that was a year Colin McCullough came in, he was a small sort of style player. Tommy Wiggan was the other side of me, and he kind of roamed out. So Cully and Tommy sort of roamed out the pitch, picked up a lot of ball. They were kind of like playmaker type players. So obviously Mickey thought with Stevie not around, he had that knee injury, obviously at part of 2008, that there was a gap there in the team, that he needed a sort of physical presence and a scoring threat. And I suppose that's what he saw me as. But would I say I played my best football in 2008? Probably not. But I don't know, maybe like I would say I was probably happier. Like 2004, I felt I was actually playing most of the best football I was playing at that stage. And there was other years that had felt like 2007, I felt I was playing as well, but I was playing as a midfielder. Like 2013 had a really good year, playing as sort of a wing forward midfielder as well. So yeah, there was lots of other years I would say I was playing better football. But that 2008 team, I would admit it, I could see what Mickey, in hindsight, I could see what he was trying to do, but it did frustrate me that I wasn't having the impact on games at times that I felt I should have been. I felt a little bit of a fraud at times when I wasn't getting hands on the ball and I wasn't like competing for kickouts and making big tackles around midfield, because that's what, to me, that's what my game was around. But look, it worked out, so who am I to argue with Mickey Hart?
Yeah, well, it's funny you should mention that, because that makes a good segue, because I was going to say what followed next probably was looking back transitional years, you know, from what we call the golden generation, from, I don't know, maybe 2011 till about 2015, when that All-Ireland under-21 team started to come through, really. What Mickey probably doesn't get enough credit for is that during that time, those transitional years didn't feel like transitional years. You know, every season it still felt like Tyrone were there and thereabouts. There was quarterfinals, semifinals, lots of big days to enjoy. And you were captain throughout that period, so you were a big part of that, the link between the two teams. But as you publicly said a few times, your relationship with Mickey was maybe a little fractured from, I think it was 2009 onwards. Did you find that difficult then, being so close to him, probably closer to him in terms of stature and ranking than you were previously, but maybe not as close relationship-wise?
Yeah, like I think actually myself and Mickey in some senses were maybe quite similar, as in I wouldn't say found that difficult. I don't think he would have found it difficult either, even though both of us knew that obviously I did take offense at that point in time of the comments in the book, and I felt a little bit sort of hard done by. And in fairness, I mean, he apologized to me over it. He said the ghostwriter had put something in that he shouldn't have done, but like, yeah, it was, at the time, it wasn't a huge that didn't totally buy into it, agree to it. I kind of said, oh, well, look, I don't really believe what you're saying to me, but I'll park it. I think both of us learned to park that sort of personal piece for the betterment of Tyrone. And I think both of us, I felt anyway, like I'm one of these sorts of guys, I don't mind, I take a lot of flack and criticism at times, and obviously you're sitting in a Sunday game and you're saying stuff, you're always going to get that, but it genuinely doesn't annoy me too much. And I suppose I was in spotlight with a county career for such a long time, I kind of learned to deal with that. And I think Mickey's the same. I think Mickey, he's got a very thick skin, and he'll have to be because he's in Derry now, but at the same time, I think both of us knew that for the betterment of drunk football, we had to park it. And I'm a very ambitious person anyway by nature, and because of that, I always wanted the captain to own. I was able to win it all Ireland as captain. That didn't happen, but
that was always in the sight. So I kind of knew as well, like I can't be at loggerheads with someone whenever, like, you can't live in Rome and fight to the Pope. And I think Mickey knew that as well, that he needed me and I needed him. And for the betterment of Trove football, it was just ignored. And to be honest, like, he would have had a good relationship in those years. It wasn't anything, and it was one of those things that kind of was put in the back burner. And but yeah, I think me and him both are of a reasonably similar mindset, that you just have to get on with things in life, and things happen. There'll be moments where you fall out with people or people don't agree with what you're saying, but at the same time, the common goal for us always was, we believe that Tyrone can win All Ireland. And every year that I took a Tyrone jersey, I totally believed that the goal and the expectation was that we were going to win All Ireland. And that's what Mickey does. He's very good at sort of being, like, he's almost hypnotic and, like, brainwashing sort of ability. Like, every Derry player, I've no doubt right now already, will believe they're going to win All Ireland in 2024. I'm not totally delayed by that fact, but at the same time, they will believe that. Mickey has that sort of thing with him. So, yeah, and in those years, even with the sort of golden generation falling away, at that stage, Peter Hart was coming on the scene and Matty Dowling was coming on the scene. And, like, Raimi Mulgrew was a big player for us for a year or two. He struggled after that. But there was lots of new players. Ronnie O'Neill was kind of coming into things. So, you did. And Tyrone, the thing about us is that, we're that strong of a county from, like, a club scene perspective, and there's that much talent in the county, you're always looking around going, well, you know, with him on board or him on board, you know, we can replace a Brian McGuigan, or we can replace a Steve O'Neill. And I don't think anyone can sit with those men in terms of stature right now, looking back at it. But at that moment in time, when you're seeing these lads coming in and you're seeing the quality and the skills that they have, I totally believe that they would come in and they would win All Irelands as well. And to be honest, like, that's where I remember the last thing I said as captain of the team, whenever I left the WBS in the semi-final of 2017, I remember saying to the lads, I'm telling you here and now, you will, as a player group, you both deserve and will win All Ireland. And says, I can't wait to meet you all and congratulate you. And I was doing RT that day when they got over the line against Mayo, and COVID or no COVID, I remember playing down with a suit on and hugging every single player, because I was just remarkably proud of the likes of Petey and Matty, had Darren McCurry, and these lads had soldiered for so long, and maybe didn't always have the kind of success that they deserved, because they're great lads, incredible lads, the Conor Miders and McGeary's and these guys as well. Like, and yeah, I was just so proud.
On Mickey Hart with the Derry job now, how do you think that'll affect his legacy with Tyrone, if at all?
Okay, I do think people will, like, only natural that there's going to be a level of resentment there. And I think Mickey will know that, and he'll understand that as well. Like, you know, I always felt Mickey was the sort of Alex Ferguson of Tyrone, and that you had that sort of 25 or 30 years. And I could never think or even see, and even yet I kind of struggle to see Mickey Hart stand with the Derry top on him in the opposition dugout to Tyrone, you know, because Tyrone and Mickey were always sort of synonymous. And, you know, I am quite probably traditional in my thinking in that sense as well. Like, I'm one of these people, I have no ambitions whatsoever of taking another club other than the Y, or I would never get involved with another county other than Tyrone, because I just love my own people. I love my own community. If you're part of something, like, as humans, you naturally gravitate towards that sort of tribalism. And yeah, because of that, and because I know Mickey was so deep-rooted and invested in Tyrone, and what I've always, every year was always about the sort of cult-like sort of, we're Tyrone and everyone else hates us. So you dismiss every other county, but we're going to come together and be so strong and have a bond like no one else. Because I've spent obviously 16 years under that sort of mindset, it just is very strange and bizarre to feel that he could now be essentially managing our biggest rival, because Derry are the best team in Ulster and probably are the contenders for Sam Maguire. So yeah, they are now our biggest rival. And the thought of Matty Derry knocking Tyrone out of a championship or something, just with Mickey Hart at the helm, for me, it just doesn't sit all that well. But obviously, Mickey has thought this thing through, and obviously, he's got ambitions as a manager to maybe go back and win Sam. And he obviously sees that Derry team maybe similar enough to Tyrone team of 2002, and he wants to lift Sam Maguire again. And if that's his motivation, fair play to him. You can't really argue with that either. But yeah, if I've no doubt there'll be a few Tyrone people not so happy. And if it doesn't go wrong, if it doesn't go right, there'll be a few Derry people not so happy. So he's definitely put himself into a bit of a pressure cooker.
No, he absolutely has. Sean, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
Good seeing you, Lee, man, here. Thanks a million for everything.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.